In the early years in elementary school, kids tend to hang together in one big group. As the years go on and students demonstrate their proficiency in some subjects, they start to get separated in most schools. The kids who've learned more get put into advanced classes where they can learn more still. Like our next guest, Reed Saras noticed when he got put in classes apart from his best friend. Reed became a teacher himself and ultimately started a nonprofit to make advanced classes available to more students. The nonprofit is Equal Opportunity Schools, and Reed Saras tells all of this in a book, The Kid Across the Hall, The Fight for Opportunity in Our Schools. Reed Saras, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
So much for having me. Good to be here.
So tell us about that moment in your life when your best friend Jamie became the kid across the hall and you were in different classes from him. That had a lot to do, it sounds like, with inspiring you to get into education.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I happen to have had a mom who was a career school counselor, and she knew the system inside and out and pointed me in the right direction. And I think Jamie's experience was a student who was being overlooked. He was among the first generation in his family to try to go to college and want to do those sorts of things. And the school gave him opportunities to color in worksheets and do dittos and things like that that weren't especially engaging even at the ages 16 and 17 years old.
So what in Jamie's case could or should the school have been doing instead, do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I became a teacher, I started talking with every student and ask if they're being challenged by their classes, ask how they're finding things. And the overwhelming experience in my first school where I worked, and then since with Equal Opportunity Schools all over the country, is that most high schoolers will tell you that they're relatively disengaged and bored and not challenged by their classes. And so, to my mind, the opportunity is to invite people into a challenge, to let them know that this is something you think they can do, and to get going on the next level of learning.
Is it possible the way school systems are constructed now, though? I mean, it sounds like you need another level of assessment than might currently be available.
That's a great question. Yeah, it does take a little bit of extra work. It can be pretty grassroots, you know, talking to a few kids in your class and say, hey, what do you think about taking the AP class or the IB class sort of a thing, all the way up to really systemic, you know, policy change at the school board level. We've seen a number of districts who said, you know, kids will be automatically enrolled in advanced courses if they meet some basic thresholds, and then parents could opt out. And then Equal Opportunity Schools, basically, to your point, you know, built a lot of systems and support for educators to be able to do that. So using existing data, maybe collecting some additional survey data and supporting teachers to have access to that information and do outreach to kids.
The opt-out idea sounds the inverse of what goes on now. As I understand the way the system is run now, you have to demonstrate some level of mastery over a subject to get more advanced classes in that subject. And what you're saying is everybody should automatically go in there and then people should say, no, my kid's not ready for that?
Yes, I think that's a system that they tried in Federal Way and Tacoma and other places like this. It's a little bit of a chicken and egg, because I think we all know if we don't find something especially interesting or engaging, and few of us find things like, you know, memorizing dates or names of something especially interesting or engaging or something we'd love to devote a lot of energy to, then you end up with low grades. And so Jamie, for example, I think it had something like a 1.7 GPA. I had a student of mine when I became a teacher and administrator who had a 1.7 GPA. And I remember thinking to myself and hearing from others, well, look at these scores. It couldn't possibly, you know, be doing upper level courses in doing a full IB diploma or any of these sorts of things based on his results. But the results and the grades and the scores that he had were really indicative of not being engaged and not being challenged. So you have to sort of look at some of those, I think, data points, but also look at others. And so we've surveyed tens of thousands of teachers, and they say top of the list, way more important than grades and test scores, is student motivation and interest area in the subject. So starting to make matches in new ways, I think.
Reed Saras is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is The Kid Across the Hall, The Fight for Opportunity in Our Schools. Reed created Equal Opportunity Schools, a nonprofit, to implement the kinds of things we're talking about here. You can join us on the exchange with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So what have you come up with in the way of measuring those kinds of things like motivation and interest, and rather than just performance on tests?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we ask teachers, you know, who they're seeing readiness in. So we collect all sorts of data. So teacher recommendations and insights and ideas, asking students what subject areas they're passionate about, looking at things like growth mindset, resiliency, community engagement. And I think, you know, for me, it started just chatting with a bunch of 10th graders in the school where I was and just learning about them and what does motivate them and drive them. And we found about 90% of kids of every background want to go to college and say that their parents expect that they would be going to college. And so I think, you know, if they have that goal, whether or not they end up pursuing it, they should have an opportunity for a college-like experience near the end of high school. It's just a matter of then thinking about, well, which one makes the most sense? Where is a teacher seeing a possibility? Where is a student seeing a special subject area interest? And then giving the supports and resources for folks to access those things so they can show that they can have a much higher GPA and a high level of engagement and those sorts of things.
So your time as a high school teacher clearly led toward the formation of Equal Opportunity Schools. Was there a particular incident or confirmation of what you had sort of settled upon that made the moment that you said, I got to do this?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I had a student who was on my cross-country running team that I coached, and I remember he would have all these interesting questions and conversations and dialogue while some of the other students had a hard time even catching their breath out there. He was going a mile a minute at, how would you test that? How would you know for sure? You know, do animals think the way that people think? How could we know that? Could you ever, you know, get to know somebody's whole life if they told you all their stories, or would that take, you know, a whole lifetime to do? And so you could never know somebody as well as, and just on and on with these interesting questions and ideas and discussions. And I remember running into him in the hallway on the first day of his junior year and noticing that he hadn't been enrolled in any advanced courses and just thinking, huh, I wonder why that is and what's going on. But I had this ability at that time that I didn't have with my best friend, that I was in a position that I could change it. And so we walked down the hallway that in our school really divided, you know, two sides of sets of educational opportunities. And he happened to have the same 1.7 GPA as my best friend had. And so we were concerned, but ended up enrolling him in the full IB diploma program. And he completed all of those courses, said it was a life-changing opportunity, and it changed my perspective about what was possible for kids. It enriched our classroom discussion. And so the next year I set about and I said, hey, this big life-changing moments can't be about who bumps into who in the hallway on the first day of school. We need to go out and find all missing students and close these gaps once and for all.
You've been living this in your own life, too, I understand. You moved your child and your family to a different school zone. Is that right?
We did, yes.
Why?
Yeah, we wanted to have a more diverse school system for our kids. I think, you know, to me, in reflecting and writing the book and thinking about what this sort of work means, thinking about some of the best experiences of my life were really in these far more diverse classrooms. My wife speaks four languages and immigrated to this country when she was 6 years old, grew up low income with a single mother, and she has such insights that I had never even imagined from my life experiences. And so I think when you think about learning, we often think about a good school means it has some sort of a particular test score, these sorts of things. And these ranking sites to look at schools often play off of that and just, you know, pull up the easiest number to look at. Like, hey, what's the GPA? Is this kid smart or not? Let me use this number to find out. And that's not how learning and education works. It really is at a fundamental level. You have to encounter something different from what's already in your mind, and then you have to incorporate that into your thinking, and that's what actually learning is. And so you could have some of that through the content and through what's on the whiteboard and the blackboard and things like that, but a lot of that comes to through who you learn with, and do you have a bigger and a broader mind through a variety of experiences that you're interacting with. And so I had that with Jamie, I have that with my wife, and our kids now have that with their classmates in a way that's not possible in more demographically isolated schools.
Reed Saris is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the founder of Equal Opportunity Schools. He is a teacher himself and now an author, too, of The Kid Across the Hall, The Fight for Opportunity in Our Schools. So what you're talking about, the idea that mixed classes do better, that having smarter kids in that class pulls the rest up, and the kids in lower academic realms tend to go up there with them. We've heard it a lot. Is it just not believed? Is it not popular with parents? Is it too difficult for schools to do? Why does it not get implemented?
Yeah, I think the prevailing myth is that Some kids, you know, to put it bluntly, I think the myth is that some kids are just really dumb and they're going to drag things down and we shouldn't be around them, sort of a thing. And this notion of separate, I'm going to get a better education by separating out. And I think that's the myth that we challenge time and again at Equal Opportunity Schools. We've partnered with more than 1,000 school and district leaders across 30 some odd states at this point. And consistently what we found was when we grew the advanced programs, when we closed access gaps by race and income, had larger, more diverse programs, the success rate on those advanced exams, which are aligned to a college level and graded externally, were at least as high of a rate of success as before we added those missing students. And so I think, you know, early on I was nervous like everyone else. You say, well, you know, I heard all these things about what kids can and can't do. And the achievement gap, for that matter, we hear a lot of data about low-income students and students of color. Man, we got this gap in achievement. Maybe they're low achievers, when really it's about an opportunity gap. And so if you close those opportunity gaps, you see achievement rise, and you see a lot of success. And we saw that time and time again across the country, to the point where we were launching initiatives with governors, partnered with the Obama White House and others to really show what's possible and not get stuck in that that false narrative and myth about what kids can and can't do.
Does the strength come from the students learning other people while they learn the academic material of the course?
I think absolutely. Yeah, I think the nature of really good learning is to take on new perspectives. And like I was mentioning earlier, if you walk out of a classroom the exact same way of thinking that you walked in, you haven't learned anything. And so to be able to have the teacher as a part of that, to be able to have classmates as a part of that, to be able to have great rich texts and insights that you're reading about is a part of that. But I think we want to all find the opportunity to broaden our mind and incorporate new things that we hadn't encountered before. And that's what kids get to do when they come together across difference. And schools are one of the last places that we really have the opportunity to do that.
Larry in Ashland just emailed in to ask, what are we not doing to engage students with learning differences who are bright but unable to learn and succeed without extra support? So often schools don't offer good support for dyslexia, auditory processing deficits, and other neurological differences. So what can be done in those cases? Thanks for the question, Larry.
Yeah, that's a great question. I like the idea of giving people opportunities to succeed at the highest levels and then the supports, like Larry was talking about, to make sure that folks can achieve their goals in school. And so my best friend Jamie, who we mentioned earlier, didn't find out till later, but he has neurodivergent elements in his learning style. And that was something that the school saw as a deficit rather than, hey, you know, he can probably do great work and let's give him the opportunity. And if he needs support, give that support as well. So I think that's critical. And not using those needs for support as an excuse not to create great learning opportunities, but provide the opportunities and the support together, I think is critical.
We have less than a minute left. How different would schools have to be in terms of, you know, attendance areas, busing students, any of that stuff to get to where you're talking about, where you hope we could get?
Oh, that's a great question. It's a complicated one. I don't know that I have a good answer for it. But I do know that we have in our public schools incredibly diverse opportunities, and taking advantage of those to the extent that you can as a parent and as a student, and not falling into the myth that a student with a low score on some test or some grade is dumb. But hey, maybe they haven't had the same opportunity yet and they can come alive with a great opportunity as I did and others have, so many of my students. And then taking the same perspective on a school. Is a school a test score that just shows up because that kid walked in the door, you know, a bunch of kids walked in the door able to hit that test score? The school that we're at now actually has higher growth. So they're creating more learning every year and kids are growing more in their academic ability at the school we're at now than previously. And so I think it takes a little bit different of a perspective and an emphasis on coming together across difference.
Sue, no town given, writes about being in the LA Unified School District, being bused, and says, I've no doubt the experiment positively impacted me for the rest of my life. Thank you, LA Unified. She says, I teach at RCC. Our disability services are outstanding. Thank you, Sue, and thank you, Reed Saras, for sharing the kids across the hall with us here on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.